other side of me is the Honorable...
I apologize, I need to just get him to restate.
Okay, we didn't have our machine on, that's our recorder, that's what we need to start over, so if you state your name and if you see him again for the record, sir.
William Eric Stokes, Sr., 065373.
Thanks again, Mr. Stokes, and I was indicating, I was introducing you to the board members, and they are the Honorable Mr. Lee Kiwanis, the Honorable Mr. David Neal, the Honorable Ms. Gail Ringhouse, the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, and my name is C.T. Wright. I'm going to serve as your panel chair and board chair today. Sir, you have been certified by the Department of Corrections for a 412A411 a home arrest hearing. That is, you will be considered for general parole, absolute discharge, or home arrest. Based on information that we have that's been presented to the board by the Department of Corrections, we take note that you're currently serving a sentence that is murder second degree and has had its beginning back on September 24, 1991, and we became parole eligible on September the 23rd, 2016, and you're now serving a 25-year to life sentence. Is that your understanding, sir?
Yes, sir.
And also based on information presented to the board that I have observed is that you did appear before this board on August 15, 2017. And at that time, the board denied your request for the same classification. However, I will point out, just for the record, for you and for all board members present and for all supporters, that I do take note that all of the current board members who are sitting at this time was present for that hearing back on August 15, 2017. Just wanted you to be aware of that. And the hearing that you had just before that one would have been January of 2017, and that one you were denied as well. I would also point out the fact that I believe that your last discipline would have been October 14, 2014, possession of drugs, and that was dismissed. Do you remember why they even wrote that one up, and then it was eventually dismissed, you know, back in 2014 about this drug situation, sir?
Yes, sir. I sent you a copy of that. I choked on my pills.
Yes, sir.
I was taking a handful of pills at the time, and I tried to try all of them, and it didn't work. I choked. And when they patted me on the back, or patted me on the back, it came back out, and I was putting right back in my mouth.
Okay, well, we did receive that, sir, but I just want to go on the record. We just want to hear from you, sir. Okay, sir, I'm going to move on at this time. I do acknowledge the receipt of the Institution of Progress report, and since you've been incarcerated, you've had a number of programs. It seems to me that perhaps the last one you had, who was the last one? You haven't had one recently, have you? Have you had any programs of counseling or anything recently, sir?
I think the last one was 2015, and they go by a priority mandated list, and because I've taken all the available programs, and I don't have a, what is it, 85% or an expiration date or a dedicated discharge date, the ones that do take priority over the rest of us. And I've taken almost everything, well, I believe everything they've got some multiple times. I sent some of the certificates to you back 2016. And I still try to get into them, but if somebody that's a mandatory priority does need it, then any of the rest of us get bumped.
Okay, sir. I just wanted to put it on the record. We do have it, and we have your full parole package that you have submitted, including your long handwritten letter, and each board member has had an opportunity to read your letter and all other materials that you have submitted to the board. I also would take note that we also have had an opportunity to review the certificates that you submitted to the board, as well as support letters that we have. We also have the court results when your sentence was appealed, and we also have a letter from the Pinal County Attorney's Office dated March the 12th, 2018, and of course this letter requested that you would be denied parole at this time. I wanted to mention the discipline in 2014 that explain why we had that one. And I don't believe that you had any more recently, have you, sir? When, is that the last one that you had recently, sir?
That was the first one I had in 12 or 14 years.
Okay, well, I just want to commend you for being discipline-free except for that one, and it was, as we've indicated, that it was dismissed, so we want to commend you for your behavior while you are incarcerated, sir. I would also just want to take note that we have some information that I'm going to be very brief because, as I said, that all board members have had an opportunity to hear you before. Board members have also had an opportunity to review all of the information that you have presented to the board, as well as all of the information that's been presented to the board by the Department of Corrections. So we've had an opportunity to review all of it. I'm just going to make a brief statement, and then if anything that I make is incorrect, I would appreciate your calling it to my attention so that we can correct the records. That based on information that I believe that I read, is that you were indicted by a grand jury on March the 1st, 1990 for first-degree murder and second-degree murder, dangerous crime offense against a child in the first degree. And December 19, 1990, the jury returned a guilty verdict at that time for second-degree murder. And that's why we are here today. It was for second-degree murder, dangerous offense, and not first-degree murder. Am I correct, sir?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And I do take note that there were two previous felonies on your record, and they were restless endangerment as well as robbery, and both of those have expired. Therefore, those are already history. The actual offense itself took place back on February 23rd, 1990, in Apache Junction, when the police was called out to your residence in reference to an 18-month-old child, a female, who was injured due to a fall. You answered the phone, and at the time you were the stepfather, and now you're the defendant, and the child was eventually transported to a Good Samaritan hospital, and she was found there brain dead at that time. And you reported that the child had fallen out of a playpen on two occasions and had received several injuries as a result of that. And the night before this happened, that she had fallen off of a dresser in your house. And you did call 911, according to information that I gleaned. However, before you called 911, you had gone to a friend's house, and then you came back to your house, and then that's when you called 911, and the police officers became involved. I also think that initially your wife kind of hesitated, but eventually she made a plea of her own, and she pleaded guilty to charge of child abuse. She received 5 years supervised probation and 1 year county time in the jail. And she was parole status. Well, no, that's incorrect. And she received the 1 year jail sentence. Is that your understanding, sir?
Yes, sir.
Is anything that I said there might be incorrect or might be partially correct so that you can correct the record, sir?
No, I believe you're correct on your team.
Okay, sir. Well, I'm going to see what you want to tell the board. As I said, we're not going into all of the details. The board members might have some questions that might go into more details of actually what happened and so forth. But right now, again, we just want to become further familiar with you and what happened and what has changed since then. Why this board should even consider making a decision to send you out into the community. So that's why we're here, to put you on paroles or supervision out in the community. So what do you want to tell the board, sir, in your own words, sir?
I sent a statement to you pretty much
that
everything, I called in the last hearing, Ms. Rittenhouse said she didn't think I changed. Anybody that doesn't change in almost 30 years, something's wrong. I won't go back to none of the behavior that I had, nothing. I don't know what I can say that is going to convince you otherwise or whatever, and that's why I wrote in my statement that my prison record, when I first came in, I was in trouble. I didn't just grow up or give up, and I chose to grow up. I earned an associate's degree, and I've taken all the programs. I have a high-trust job. I don't know,
We always want to give you an opportunity for you to tell the board and anything that you need to tell the board, because the board, you know that we have not made a decision as it relates to today, and so we'd like to get as much information as possible from you. Some things we may already know, even we may ask some things that we may think that we already know the answer, and sometimes you can expand on them, or you might not want to expand on them. So is there anything, but you say you have your associate degree, what do you do every day since you've been recently? What do you do now? You're working on the yard, or are you doing anything at this time, sir?
I keep records for recreation, and like keep scores on the tournaments and do the paperwork and stuff, because it's something I can do from inside my house. I'm on medical aid, I've been on medical aid since about February of 2010.
Okay.
I've been awaiting some corrective surgeries for the last 14 years and it never happened.
Okay. Thank you. Excuse me, go ahead, sir.
It's just, they're not going to do them. Was it the 17th of October last year? They told me, let us pull your teeth and we'll give you a new knee. Well, they pulled my teeth and I still haven't got a new knee.
Oh, okay. You made some progress. You got 50% of it done, and we trust that they'll get the rest of it as well. I was just looking back through. I think that, and you can correct me on this one, I think that you indicated in your parole package that if you're released, that you wanted to stay in, was it in Mason where you was going to reside, sir?
Well, I have numerous addresses. I have my grandma's up in Yarnell.
Yeah.
I've got an uncle down in Morena. There's a couple addresses in Mesa. Whichever one's approved, whatever the board wants from me, I will do. I'm willing to do. I know I need to keep up with the counseling with the psychiatrists and psychologists. And I, whatever else, whatever you want me to do, I'm willing to do. I'm not coming back here.
So this, excuse me, go ahead.
This is not the place to be. I don't even know what to say. It's a cesspool.
You mentioned with psychiatrists, having any contact at this time with the psychiatrist, or is that something that happened in the past, sir?
I see a psychiatrist every 90 days, I see a psychologist every 30 days.
Okay. Have you on any type of medication at this time, sir?
Yes, sir. I take medications. You want to know what kind?
Yes, sir. For what reason have they given you medication, sir?
Schizoaffective disorder that we never knew until in here. And I know I have to take the meds. I take them religiously every day. I take Risperdal. They're changing the antidepressant from Celexa to Taxol and then Buscar.
Now, from your perspective, sir, they're working, are they helping you? Just from your perspective, you know better than anyone else because you're the one who's taking them, so are they helpful to you or not?
Yes, sir, they are.
Thank you. Yes, sir. Well, at this time, I could go on and on with questions, as you could probably figure out by now, but I'm not going to. I'm going to give it to other board members who might have some questions for you at this time, sir. Board members, any questions at this time for Mr. Stokes? Well, Chris DeMartha Johnson.
Sir, maybe I kind of missed it in here, though. So, in your words, what occurred at the time that this incident occurred? What happened? What led up to it, and why?
I believe you guys, we talked last time about that, and I said that I was, for the first time outside my family, I was going to explain it. That's why I sent that solid witness report to you, that you guys have.
Okay, I have a silent witness report. It's not totally clear in the silent witness report. I have it. So I'd like to know, in your own words, is there something that within your family that you don't want it, you don't want to say? Or
no, no, I discussed everything with my family. I had left my house with two boys and went to my aunt's house to get a haircut and beard trim. And got called home, and I walked into what was going on. I couldn't stop to it, but it didn't do any good. The damage was already done. I called the paramedics, and while I went to the neighbor's house, and he was a certified EMT, to here, get help right then and call us, so that's what I did. And I never went down. And that's my fault. The drugs in the house was my fault. You know, I was who I was back then. I did sell drugs to make a living, and I know it went right. And I will never go back to that behavior. I do want to try to put my education to use. I walked in and I stopped it. But I wouldn't tell. Shame on me. Somebody else does something around me and I'm outside, they're going to jail because I ain't taking the blame for nothing anymore. I ain't covering up nothing anymore. I'm not getting into that behavior anymore. Nothing.
The Simon's witness report is not real clear, but it states or indicates some information in there that it was Alice.
Yes, sir.
So what are you saying that Alice was the one responsible and you just took the rap or what? I'm just trying to understand. So I see the silent witness report is not real clear in the silent witness report of what happened. So I'm trying to ask you, you know, what occurred or what happened during that period of time to have a clear understanding.
I was sitting there, if I walked in on what was going on, yes, that's what happened.
Well, what was it that you walked in on, sir? I mean,
her beating Kayla. Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
This is Mr. Johnson, right?
Yes, sir.
And I'm no fool. I'm not the smartest guy in the room, but I'm no fool. Had I done it, I would have taken one of the last two plea bargains that was offered to me. And I would have been home 24 years ago.
Okay, so.
But I fought it.
So
that's what you do.
So did you ever at any point, sir, prior to this silent witness statement that we have, have you ever any other time said that you didn't commit the crime, that it was Alice?
Yes, I have.
And
it didn't really go. We tried to get it back into court, but the way it came to my lawyers, the judge wouldn't even let it be shown to the jury.
So was that
different? And that's okay. You know, it's okay. Nothing can go back and change what happened. Nothing can go back and give us anything back. And I accepted it, so I'll accept it. I wouldn't tell. That was it. This is now. And look, I know the kind of person I was back then, and it wasn't good.
with you, sir. I'm still not completely understanding what happened. Okay, so when you went to trial, when did you come forth with any information that it was Alice that committed this or caused the death of this child?
I talked to my family about it, but I didn't have kids.
So when you, the original trial base that was never brought up back in. I'm trying to figure out, so could you tell me when you were asked, when was the first time any information was brought out about someone else being responsible for the death?
It might have been the 98 during the trial, but the judge kept, the prosecutor kept objecting, and because it was going off the file of witness report, and the judge would never let it be brought in. I can remember a lot of things that some things are, you know, you just put out of your mind or you're hazy. The trial, I was kept on so many tranquilizers that I don't even know how I was walking.
So, during the trial, you were on tranquilizers?
Oh, yes, sir.
And why
was that? I was on Advan, Trenzine, Xanax, Valium, Nebutal, Tylenol, Plastil. They were stopping the trial and they were bringing cups of pills and take them.
Why?
I don't know. That's what the doctor kept prescribing. I mean, I had physical problems and with injuries that I had, so I was on medication for that.
Okay.
And anxiety, and I didn't even know back then that I had a mental problem. I didn't know here until something broke over in Maury some years back, and that's when I found out.
So, you walked in, and what was going on when you walked in? With what? Her hands or her fists or what?
Yes, her hands.
So what was he doing? What was happening? On the buttocks or?
Excuse me?
You said that's
all over. Her. All over.
So was he holding her or how was it happening, sir?
She had her arm and was hitting her all over.
Okay, and what was she hitting her with?
Her hand and her fist and I stopped it.
Okay, and then after you stopped it, what happened?
I'm going to go ahead and she needs to go to the store, and I stayed there and took care of things, get ready. I had a trip to make, so I was getting things ready to go.
So did you take the child over to someone else's house?
Yes, that's the one that went to the neighbors. He was an EMT.
So why did you... Go ahead, sir.
Well, he was closer to it. I could get to him faster than the paramedics could get there, so I went to him. Did he come back and call him? I thought that was the right thing to do.
And where was she at when you took the child to the neighbors?
Alice?
She
was at the store.
Okay, and so why didn't you call the paramedics instead of going to the neighbor's house?
Because he was an EMT.
Okay.
And I figured if he could help quicker than calling him, if I got his help and then the paramedics got there, it would be help faster. I thought it was the right thing to do.
So when you say she was holding the baby and striking, you just said all over. What does all over mean?
From the head down. That's what she was hitting her. The three people that knew that she had done stuff like that, none of them would tell me. They later apologized for not telling me, but what good did they do telling me after the fact?
So why did you decide to take the rap for what had occurred then?
She was my wife and she was trying to pretend. And I've been raised to protect your family at all costs to yourself, no matter what. So I did. I protected my family.
So So did you consider the baby part of your family?
Yes, sir, I did.
So there was no protection for the baby as part of the
family? Oh, there was, and I don't know what's going on. Truthfully, you're probably conceiving me because of my wife. Because I don't like that stuff. I don't go for it. But, I know a lot of part of my fault because it was the drugs that we had in the house, the lifestyle that we live, and all of that. I can never get away from that. My lifestyle went over and got somebody hurt. And that's a foolish thing to do. Stupid thing to do. And I can never take that back or give anything back. All I can do is change the way that I was and try to move forward and do better.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Johnson. Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Craig. Mr. Stokes, had you noticed, bruises or that maybe the child was afraid of your wife before the day that this happened?
No, ma'am, I wasn't home a lot. As I discussed in past hearings, I sold drugs for a living. I was gone 2 to 3 weeks at a time, and I would come home. And, kids, they're always falling down, they're always banging something. I didn't notice, and the 3 people that didn't know wouldn't tell me. One was my mother, because my mother knew how I would react. And I'm being truthful, you would probably been seeing me with my wife, because I don't. Mine are so rotten and dreadful, so are my grandkids, because that's just the way they're supposed to be, And, but she was pregnant, twins. And I tried. And what good did that do me? Because after I was in jail, she went and had a late-term abortion and killed them too. So what good did it do me? It didn't do me any good. My parents are gone. My grandparents are gone. My kids are grown adults. And my life without home, I can't give them back the time that they missed. I can't give back her life. But I would trade things to them if I could. Because it should never happen.
Thank you, Mr. Stokes. Thank you, Dr. Okay,
thank you so very much, Ms. Rittenhouse. Honorable Ms. DeCorwitz.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Stokes, can you hear me clearly?
Yes, sir.
I just have a question. It's a tough one. If you knew that your wife beat a child to death, why did you think you could beat the charges, so to speak, in a jury trial?
I did. I just didn't do it. When you do something, you take the best deal you can get. That's the way I've learned. And if I would have done it myself, I would have taken one of the last 2 plea agreements. I fought it because I did not do it.
But you knew your, in your words, you knew your wife did it.
Yes, sir.
So you thought you could beat the charges knowing that your wife murdered a child.
I don't know what I was thinking except to protect my family. Maybe it's stupid. I don't know, Mr. It's Mr. Quinones, right?
Yes, sir.
I don't know.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Quinones. Honorable Mr. Neal.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Stokes, in reference to the incident itself, you say that you came in and saw your wife beating her body, beating the child's body, but the injuries that were shown in the autopsy was the major injury was a blow to the head that had a mark that was consistent with a tile on the floor, and the doctors all said that that falling from that chest drawers or whatever she supposedly fell from wouldn't be the fall wouldn't be enough to be consistent with those injuries, and there were layers of bruises on the child's brain. That kind of abuse is visible, and according to the information we have, your wife said she noticed it and talked to you about it and told you to quit and all that stuff. So she's saying she noticed bruises and everything, and you're saying you didn't. But if that kind of abuse, there would be bruises every day of the week that would be visible if they got hit on the head like that. So I'm having trouble with your story of what you saw when you came in and what you're trying to cover up, because unless it happened after you sent your wife to the store, the head injury that she had at the time should have been more visible than anything on the body, and it should have been more noticeable than you that she had that injury. So
she had a lump on her head, yes, sir.
Okay, but you didn't mention the lump until I mentioned the lump. And I have a problem with that. Okay, thank you, sir.
It wasn't really big. It was...
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Honorable Mr. Neal. Thank you so very much. Honorable Mr. Johnson.
So I'm trying to understand your story. When this incident occurred, your wife immediately said that she thinks that you were the one responsible for the child's death. You made the call to the police department and said the child had fallen and that the dresser drawer had fallen. And you were the one who called and made the statements about the child falling. You didn't say anything about the wife beating the child or striking the child with the closed fist. I'm trying to understand that. You made all these other statements, but you never made that statement during this period of time. And the wife admitted to slapping the child when this incident occurred. Says that it's just a different story. So how did you come up with the story that the child fell from the dresser or the dresser fell on the child, which caused the damage? How did you come up with that?
She's climbed on everything before. She was learning to climb. She tumbled down some stairs one time with my daughter Anna and my son Little Man, Eric Jr. And got scuffed up. So they got scuffed up. She played out in the yard. I've seen her climb out of the playpen. Everybody's seen that. Climb on the dresser drawer because there was a lamp there that had some dangly stuff that she thought was so cool.
Okay, so
I told him I don't know, I didn't see it, I assumed. That's what I told what's his name, Duncan.
Okay.
Ryan Duncan.
Okay, because the medical examiner says that there was bruising on the child's head, and the death was because of blows to the head, and that in the autopsy report that there was evidence that there was matches on the on something matched on the tile floor, matched where the kid's head would have been struck on the tile floor, which is already different from what the story that you still are actually telling right now today. Do you understand
what I'm saying? I didn't catch the last part of that, Mr. Thompson.
Okay. In the pre-sentence report, I'm just going to read a sentence to you. It says the attending examiner who was also able to match the attending examiner was also able to match a portion of the tile taken from the defendant's home to the imprint in the child's head. The autopsy concluded that the child died of a massive head trauma, which means that that child's head struck that tile. That's.
Did it hit the floor? Did she hit the floor? Yes, sir.
Okay, so where did that occur at?
The kitchen dining room type area is where the tile was.
Okay, so how did the kid fall out the crib inside of the kitchen dining room area?
That's a typo, I don't know.
Okay.
They just got to what I assumed happened, so I told him.
Okay, but you're the one who called the police and said the child
fell
out the crib, and you're the one who made the story and the statements in the beginning. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, I couldn't be definitive about anything with them.
And then, did you and your wife discuss what you were going to tell the police if you were trying to defend her? Did you guys discuss it or what?
Yes, sir, we did.
So why was she immediately saying that she thought you were responsible for the child's death?
I don't know. Maybe she thought I wouldn't keep my word.
So what was your word? What was the discussion?
That I would protect her.
Okay. So
she admitted in front of a sheet from the county jail. She admitted to other people in the county jail. One was an officer. But there was other inmates there when she admitted it. She admitted on the street. It's okay. I took responsibility for it. I guess I'll take it now.
Okay. So the medical examiner says that they matched the portion with the tile. The tile's in the kitchen and the living room. Where, and you said you observed the mother, Alice, striking the kid over by the arm and striking the kid. So when did the child hit the floor?
I don't know if it was right there after I got there. It might have been before.
Okay. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mr. Johnson. If there are no further questions at this time, we will go to the supporters. I believe that, I don't know which of you wish to come first. Okay, please come forward, ma'am. And please state your name for the record.
Julia Ann Sokatch.
And welcome to the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. And what do you want to tell the board at this time, ma'am?
I just want to say that I have always known that I call him Derek, his middle name. I've always known that he was innocent. He was only married to Alice for a week or maybe two when this occurred. Like you said, he was getting a haircut. He came home to her beating the child and hit her so hard that she fell backwards on the kitchen floor. And that's why the tile print was on the back of her head. The handprint that was on the child's face was a small handprint. He's got hands like a ham. I mean, if he had hit her, they would have been totally marked up. But there was a small handprint on the child's face. He sent her away because she had lost her children to Child Protective Services before, and she said, oh no, I'm going to lose my children again. And so he sent her to the store. He ran next door to get the EMT, came back and called 911, and when they got there, I do believe the child was dead when they got there. I don't know if they, you know, kept her going artificially till she got to the hospital or not. But then I don't know what you call it, a plea bargain thing, so it's not to take responsibility for the death. She testified against him and said that he did it. And later when he was convicted, she has been heard all over town telling people, I did the crime and he's doing the time. And like you said, after he got sentenced, she had a late-term abortion and got rid of the two babies that she was carrying. she should have been the one in prison for this length of time and not him. And I'm sorry that he felt it was so necessary to protect her. I think it was, I don't know how to put it, it's like an honor thing that you protect your family. And he was always that way. He always took the blame for what his sisters did when they got in trouble. He would always take the blame for them. So I do believe that, I do know that when he was younger, he was doing drugs and he sold drugs and he did a lot of bad things. And he probably deserved some prison time, but not for this crime. And I'm really looking forward to him being home.
And did the family have some problem with the marriage that he and...
No, no. I never met Alice. I never met her myself. But it was common knowledge. And you know, you can look at the court records that she had her children taken away from her more than once.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. Brooklyn, has questions? Under Mr. Johnson.
Yes, sir.
Did you say they had only been married for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think so. I think it was only a couple of weeks. In fact, I hadn't even known that they had gotten married. So I don't know where they got married, but they hadn't been married very long.
Okay, thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And are you going to make a statement, sir? Your testimony, sir?
My name is Ralph Weaver. I have known Eric's family since way back when, and I've just been a part of his family for about the last 6 years. My wife, she didn't mention her other name at the end of the thing. She said Julia Ann Zocash, but it's also Weaver, and so that's where that fits in. We were married in 2012 up there in Groveland. But I'm here to support Eric. We've been down to visit with him. We've had a couple of food visits with him and really enjoy ourselves. And I'm looking forward to one day, hopefully soon, that I feel like that he's paid for it in time and in his mind, that he realizes the sacrifice that he's made. He's missed out on his life. He's going to have a hard time, I know, when he's released, getting back in. But I believe that he can make it. He's took some courses that might help him to get his foot in the door on some jobs, you know. And I don't know. I'm just here to support him and as an uncle and a friend. And I love his parents, and I love him, and that's about all I can say. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions, board members? No question. Thank you so very much, sir. Okay. And as I indicated on the phone, is his daughter, but she said that she did not want to make a statement, but we want to give you an opportunity once again. Do you still not want to make a statement, ma'am?
I would like to say something, Dr. Wright, if that's okay.
Yes, ma'am. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Just for the record, my name is Anna Stokes. William Stokes is my father. excuse me. I understand that nothing could ever bring little Kayla back. I get that. And I get that everybody, you know, mourned her and nobody's ever forgotten about her. I don't know how many times I've visited her grave that doesn't have a headstone, but and I don't remember her, me being so young, I don't remember the little girl, but I do know that my father's always loved his children, his nieces and nephews, his grandchildren, all the same. Any child he would stick up for and not let anybody pick on him. It's just that's who he was. Still is the same way. I would also like to say that, you know, like I said, nothing could ever bring Kayla back, and it's super sad what happened, but also it's super sad that, you know, I'm believing that my father is an innocent man, and it's super sad that I've missed out on my dad my entire life. And I would just, you know, we're ready to support him when he comes home. We're ready to help him out and do whatever he needs to let him come home and be with his grandchildren, because he was never able to be there for me because he was protecting his family. So I would really, really appreciate you guys considering granting his parole. His family's ready. My Aunt Judy is the only one that's left. My Aunt Icy passed away. My grandfather passed away. My grandma passed away. So Aunt Judy and then Jerry, my dad's grandmother, they're the only ones left. And we're the only ones willing to help, and we want to make it to where it's doable. So I really appreciate if you'd consider that. Thank you, Mr. Wright, for giving me the opportunity and letting me be there. Bye, son.
Thank you so very much. Let me see if we have any questions from board members. There are no questions from board members, so thank you so very much for your testimony to the board. At this time, Mr. Stokes, we're coming towards the end of your hearing. I don't believe that there's anyone else to speak on your behalf, or I don't believe that there are any victims present as well. I don't have any records. Therefore, we're going to move towards the end of your hearing, but we want to give you an opportunity to make a final statement to the board before the board goes into discussion and makes its determination today. What else do you want to tell the board without repeating yourself, sir?
I can't change the past. All I can do is work on changing myself. And I've got away from everything. I have the education now that once I get the medical problems fixed, I can put to use. And I can be a productive member of society. And now, you'll never see me again, except when I come back and ask to be released off the parole. You will never see me again. I mean, if I get a traffic ticket, it'll be tragic. I don't even want to drive. The roads scare me. Every time they take me out to medical, it freaks me out so bad, it's like, oh no, I can't do this. I just want to be able to be there for the family and to try to make a difference. If my experiences can stop other people from coming here, if I can quit doing drugs after doing them since I was 8 or 9 years old and been successful for 23 years, maybe I can help somebody else. Maybe I can be a counselor or something. And I've looked into being that, a drug counselor. And I would like to help other people. And I will do my best for the rest of my life to help other people.
Thank you, sir.
And be there.
Go ahead, sir.
And be there for my family. My aunt and uncle are old. My grandma's old. That's the only ones left of the elders in our family. They need people there to help them. And even though I'm banged up, I would rather me hurt than them hurt. I'll do whatever it takes. I'll hurt. I don't care. As long as they don't have to. And I'll go to any counseling, any program you want me to take. I'll do. And I'll be successful. Because I won't fail again. No way. I guess that's about it, Mr. White. I appreciate you taking the time and seeing me today.
Thank you so very much. And on behalf of the board, we thank you for your participation as well as your supporters. At this time, I think you know by now how the board is now going into discussion. We're going to ask that you remain quiet as well as your supporters, and this will be the first time for this purpose that we will do this, although we've met you before, but with today's testimony and today's information that's been presented to the board, we have the first opportunity that we've had. We've not discussed it at all. So at this time, the board is going into discussion. I'd like to reserve the right to be the last one to speak. Is anyone that wishes to speak at this time? If not, yes, Honorable Mr. Johnson.
Dr. Wright, I have a hard time really understanding this, that the story that we're getting from Mr. Stokes, and he had only been married a couple of weeks, and he's defending his ex-wife, who is accusing him of being responsible for the death, and then subsequently this information later came out. We do have which is not totally real clear, a letter from Mr. Stokes, as well as a copy of the silent witness statement, which also is not real. It's not real clear in the silent witness statement, at least to me. I didn't see it. The federal clear in the silent witness statement, I guess that was something that he was going to use. And the silent witness was done on January 21st, 1990. I have problems with trying to understand the story that he gave about the child being hit by the mom, struck in the mom several times, and the story he gave about the child falling in the dresser drawer and falling out the crib. Was just a lot of inconsistency still in the story that actually occurred in that period of time.
Thank you so much, Honorable Mr. Johnson. Anyone that wishes to speak? Okay, Honorable Ms. Rittenhouse.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. I'm having some of the same issues that Mr. Johnson is, and I mean, I understand, and Mr. Stokes has told us that he was a drug user, and sometimes that can skew your perception of what happened, what's happening. But I'm just not, I'm not clear on what happened. I'm not clear on what happened. And he's the only one present in present company who was there when it happened. And I'm just not bothered by the inconsistency of it.
Thank you so very much, Ms. Rittenhouse. And Ms. Neal, anything?
Yes, sir. A lot of Mr. Stokes' explanation of what happened in protecting the family just it doesn't really make sense when you go through the entire file on about the injuries and everything, but his sister had a note that she got that was written by the wife about not, you know, about that he needs to quit meeting on the kids or something of that effect. The neighbor that he first took the child to told the police that he felt they really needed to check into the case, and there was others from, I guess, from the apartment complex over there at that time that said they had seen the defendant physically abuse the child before, or have heard him refer to her using derogatory terms. And then, of course, what Mrs. Stokes said at the time and on her second interview, and apparently through her trial and through Mr. Stokes' trial, nothing came up about him not doing it and covering up for the family, but the idea of protecting the family at all costs, that just doesn't ring true when you're protecting your life at the expense of the life of another family member. It just doesn't ring true to me, so I'm having trouble with the idea of any kind of release at this time.
Thank you so very much, sir. Mr. Collins, sir.
Thank you, sir. In short, I'm just not satisfied with the explanation of the instant offense. And frankly, I have trouble with the idea that even if it was probable that his ex-wife did the crime, that he sent her away to cover up for the crime and thought he could beat the charges. It's disturbing to me. That's one voting member's opinion.
Thank you so very much. And I'm going to confer with my colleagues. I think that the dots are just not connected at this point, and we really need to have a better feel of what was happening. Therefore, in order to move forward, I'm going to offer motions the way it goes, and the motion is going to be based upon information that the board has received and has had an opportunity to review. I am going to move to deny Stokes joint parole, absolute discharge of home arrest, and for a one-year setup. That is my motion.
Second.
Agree.
Okay. That was something by you, Mr. Who seconded it?
I did.
Okay, yeah, okay. Let's want to make sure I checked the right box. Okay, and then it was agreed by Ms. Johnson, Mr. Corrales, and Ms. Rittenhouse. And we also asked for one of the and the release type is 412A411, home arrest. And the reasons for denial include once again, serious and violent offense, loss of human life, serious and deviant behavior, trauma to the victim, age of the victim, revolver, bumps and bruises, serious bodily injury. We do have a release plan. We do have family community support present. I think his institutional behavior has been okay, and recent disciplinary none. So is there anything else that any board member wishes to include at this time? I think that he's doing programs now, including the psych program in at this time, so I will not want to check that one unless some board member would insist we do that. Anything else any board member wishes to include? If not, Mr. Stokes, we're coming towards the end of the hearing, and you heard that the board has denied, and I've stated the reasons. Is there anything else that I need to report, sir?
I see you again.
We'll see us in about a year from now, not exactly on this date, but the Arizona Department of Corrections will have to certify you, and once they've certified you, then we will place you on the calendar here at the board. Executive clemency. So it'll be around a year from now, sir. And I want to thank you so very much, Mr. Stokes. A pleasure to speak with you again. I want to thank Arca and Art for being here. And thank you, Mr. Stokes, for being on the phone. And this is going to end the hearing. And Mr. Stokes, if you would be kind enough to put the CO3 back on the phone, I would certainly appreciate it. Thank you, and the hearing is over.